Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about exercise improving your sex life and how improving health and feeling better tops the reasons why people really go gluten-free. It's making a difference. Drinking raw milk dramatically increases your risk of foodborne illness, according to Johns Hopkins University School of Health. And pregnant women are not getting enough omega-3 fatty acids, critical for infant development, and a lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to spend extra time today, instead of going to all of our other commentaries, with my guest, Professor Andrew Harvey, Conversations with Remarkable Minds. Transforming our values and activism to confront humanity's trajectory towards an uncertain and possibly apocalyptic future. Now, for those of you who've heard him in the past, Andrew Harvey is one of the world's leading religious scholars and educators. He is a founder of the Institute for Sacred Activism, and he is a graduate of Oxford University, and also Cornell University, and he is a really deep thinker on spiritual issues. So we're going to have a lot of interesting insights to gain from hearing what he has to say today. So you won't want to miss that interview. So all the other things I would normally deal with, including an important commentary I'll do tomorrow on how to solve California's water crisis, I'll share that with you. And how privatization degrades our daily lives, which it does. People are just not aware of all the different ways that it does that. We're going to go into this in depth. But now the latest on health. This is from Cedars-Sinai Center and in researching cancer. Quote, men who get the most physical activity report erections, orgasms, above and beyond the normal. So, that's good news. They took a look at 300 men, and they measured their physical activity and then got reports back on the frequency and duration of erections and overall sexual function. Men who exercised the most, quote, as measured by what is known as metabolic equivalence, had higher sexual function scores, regardless of race, and this was published in the Journal of Sexual Medicine. Specifically, better sex was reported for those who engaged in the equivalent of 2 hours of strenuous exercise, 3.5 hours of moderate exercise, or 6 hours of light exercise a week. Men who exercised less had lower sexual function scores. One more reason that as we age, as men tend to stop exercising, develop the pot belly. That drives estrogen, a meat-based diet, high-protein diet. That drives estrogen. And stress, dry estrogen, all those work against the balance of testosterone that we need, especially free testosterone, in order to function sexually. So, let's exercise. There's a lot of people on gluten-free diets. In fact, for more than 20 years in all of our health support groups, we have advocated a gluten-free diet. We've had people talk about how they have more energy, they don't have bloating, constipation, they don't have diarrhea. They feel a lot more invigorated. Plus, a lot of inflammation in the body is no longer there. This is the latest study. It shows, quote, gluten-free has taken the food world by storm, but the specific reasons that turn consumers into gluten-free converts have been a bit of a mystery. And they did this survey to shed some light on what drives people. And while individuals with celiac disease may be most vulnerable to gluten in the diet, it's not the main driver for consumers starting to eat gluten-free. Interest in improving health and feeling better overall That's the main driver. So whatever your reason for wanting to be gluten-free, a lot of people who don't have gluten intolerance, who are not allergic to wheat, are going that way because they're feeling better. There's been a debate for a long time in the health movement about the benefits or the contraindications for raw milk. On the one hand, the certified and monitored raw dairies, including the one that was one of the longest-running ones in California history, the Altadena dairy, had very little problems. Rare that they would ever have a contaminated batch of milk. We know that processed milk, homogenized and pasteurized, and also coming from cattle that have been given a growth-stimulating hormone, are highly problematic. You do not have those health concerns about raw milk. The problem with raw milk is, how do you know that the person producing the raw milk didn't have bacteria in the milk? This is from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Quote, as analysts conducted research at the Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, they found that the risks of drinking raw, unpasteurized cow's milk are significant. Consumers are nearly 100 times more likely to get foodborne illness from drinking raw milk than they are from drinking pasteurized milk. In fact, the researchers determined that raw milk was associated with over half of all milk-related foodborne illnesses, even though only 3.5% of all the U.S. population consumes raw milk. Based on their findings, the researchers discouraged the consumption of raw milk, which some claim is healthier and tastes better than pasteurized milk. They note that the risks are better understood than the benefits, and that the future research is needed to determine whether the health benefits claims are legitimate. Okay, I believe that that's legitimate. I don't see that there's bias in their study. However, you have to understand that in some states, if a person has dairy cattle on their own property, they can sell raw milk, and they can drink it themselves. So what we don't know is how many cases of raw milk poisoning happen by people who don't have a full knowledge of how to do it hygienically. I mean, you could have a cow, a dairy cow, and you could milk it, and you could drink the milk, and you could end up, our family member, going to the hospital with food poisoning, and then that's recorded as source raw milk. Now, compare that with a certified organic raw milk dairy. Then ask this question. How many cases of food poisoning came from there? Now, as far as I've been able to determine, and I have to do far more research on this, very, very, very few cases of foodborne illness come from certified dairies because they're inspected regularly. They have to maintain high levels of hygiene. They have to soak down all their equipment. They have to sterilize their equipment. They have to make sure that the udders on the cows are kept clean and disinfected. Well, that then isn't being fair to say that raw milk, unpasteurized, is dangerous 100 times more. Be specific. It would be like saying, vegans are unhealthy. Okay? They're 100 times less healthy than meat eaters. All right. Now let's just say hypothetically that someone made that statement. I would immediately say, which vegans are you referring to? Are you referring to those vegans who have followed a healthy regimen based upon educating themselves? The ones that are having 12 to 14 servings of fruits and vegetables organically grown and no GMO? Those that are having 75% of their diet raw and the rest living food diet? No, we weren't talking about those. Those are healthier than the meat eater by 100 times. I'm going to live a longer life and not have heart disease, stroke, cancer. I see, but you took the stressed out teenager who's given up eating meat because they don't want to see a cow suffer, good, but who's now living off donuts and pizza crust, bad. You've lumped them both together. So what I see frequently in science and in the articles, and I read dozens upon dozens per day, are unintentional biases, where they simply didn't look at the bigger picture and try to find a context to make their argument. So that is where I'll do an article. I'll come back to that on an upcoming program after I've contacted the state health departments in all states where there are organic dairies, and I'll give you the actual statistics. For pregnant women, according to the University of Alberta and Calgary, you're not getting enough of the omega-3 fatty acids, and that could be critical for infant development. Quote, Alberta pregnancy outcome and nutrition is a birth cohort involving over 2,000 women and their infants from Calgary and Edmonton that was funded by the state, and they found that you're not getting enough. And if you don't get enough of the omega-3 long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids, it will impact the development of your fetus. This was published in Applied Physiology, Nutrition, and Metabolism. Well, that's true not just in Canada. It's true in Africa. Could you imagine that if instead of giving through the Gates Foundation the vaccines, which do not protect the children, and instead put that same amount of money into clean water from deep wells, proper sanitation with latrines, local clinics that had medications for malaria and tuberculosis, food pantries and hydroponic gardens that could have people even in a desertified area grow food year-round, you would virtually eliminate probably 80% of the diseases that now impact children. And omega-3 fatty acids, giving them vitamin A, vitamin B complex, vitamin E, vitamin C, and the omega-3s. You would no longer see the diseases that we see if you did the same thing in India. Now, I know this for a fact because my brother was the one responsible for seeing that all pregnant women in the Dominican Republic receive free prenatal vitamins. And that dropped the incidence of problems during pregnancy and the development of that fetus way down. So it's not just that we're lacking omega-3, we're lacking a full spectrum of nutrition for pregnant women, and we should really make that a major issue. Also, for those of you who want to lower your risk of having a stroke or colorectal cancer, let's focus on colorectal cancer because this was just published in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute, and it was research from Harvard School of Public Health. Once again, those omega-3 fatty acids, quote, intake associated with lower risk of colorectal cancer. How simple is that? Not only are you helping your heart, your brain, you're helping slow down aging, you're turning off inflammation in your heart, but you're also helping prevent colorectal cancer. That's good. Air pollution is linked to an increased risk of stroke. The more polluted the air, the more likely you are to die. So most people would never think this is important, but then you have to look at the statistic. Stroke is a leading cause of death, kills 5 million people worldwide. Pollution in at least 28 countries also kills millions of people. So we're talking about small particulate matter, so small you won't even probably see it. We're not talking about the air out of Beijing, where you can't even see in front of you. We're talking about where you think that it's not bad. So make sure that you're aware of checking before you buy in an environment. Is the air clean? High cholesterol and triglycerides can keep vitamin E from reaching body tissues. So, this is according to the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So if you have elevated cholesterol or elevated triglycerides, make sure that you get vitamin E, that you take it 3 times a day in natural form. I suggest maybe 200 units in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening. You're more likely then get it into the tissues because otherwise it could be blocked. And finally, from the University of Michigan, you know, all those antipsychotic drugs that people are taking. Now, historically, people took them when they had extreme anxiety and could not be controlled. Now 25% of all women between 25 and 45 in the United States are taking antipsychotic medication. But we also found that thousands of people were dying in nursing homes because they were starving to death or they were dehydrated to death. How's that possible? Simple. Give them tranquilizers. They won't ask you for anything. They'll just stay there like a zombie all day long, strapped into a chair. That's how bad nursing homes are in the United States. This is from the University of Michigan. Quote, drugs aimed at quelling the behavior problems of dementia patients may also hasten their deaths more than previously realized. The research adds more troubling evidence to the case against antipsychotic drugs as a treatment for delusions, hallucinations, agitation, aggression, and this also is with people with Alzheimer's and dementia. In the new issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association Psychiatry, they looked at 91,000 American veterans over the age of 65 with dementia. And those that were on the antipsychotic medication, they die much faster. They have much greater risk of death. So don't take antipsychotic medication. It's not good for you. It's not good for anyone except the pharmaceutical industry. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome you from all over the world, and I want to thank the people on the new Facebook. A gentleman from Ireland wrote me this morning, another one from Australia, one from China. A professor from China wrote and was sharing thoughts. So from all over the world, we're talking with people every day, sharing films, documentaries, calls to action, and the most important and high-quality articles on progressive-themed issues that are not covered in the alternative left-right media, but we do hundreds of articles a day, tens of thousands in our library. Now, we're going to go in 5 minutes to Dr. Andrew Harvey, Conversations with Remarkable Minds, Transforming Our Values and Activism to Confront Humanity's Trajectory Towards an Uncertain and Apocalyptic Future. But we just want to take a moment, say hello to Luann Panessi, who's on the line, because Luann is instrumental in the upcoming retreat, which we're doing as a fundraiser, and she does counseling with people. We have a whole team flying in from around the United States who contribute their time and energy and expertise in meditation, Tai Chi, massage therapy, cooking classes, juicing classes, homesteading classes, moving back to the land classes, personal health issues, philosophical issues, yoga. We do it all every day. Plus juicing, you get those wonderful smoothies and juices. You would never drink this amount of juice. Plus gourmet vegan meals, beautiful presentation, master chefs doing the cooking. And sprouting, you get to see, when you get there, a tour, and you get to see all the sprouts that are growing. In fact, they've already been planted. The microgreens were planted just so that you can all have microgreens fresh, a whole variety, every day. You don't get this anywhere else, not all this. And hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Did you forget to mention the incredible gourmet vegan cuisine? Oh,
no.
My God.
Every day, every meal is different. Every dish is different. They get to take home the recipes. But while they're there, they get to enjoy the taste.
Well, I tell you, Gary, we're filling up fast. What a phenomenal group of people. If you're looking for like-minded people, if you're looking for people who are upbeat and excited about learning about sustainability and how to become strong and resilient and autonomous thinkers, and it's just going to be a wonderful, wonderful week away. And you come back empowered. You come back feeling really good about who you are and what you're doing in this world. That's basically the feedback we've gotten. So I have both full pay positions as well as work study positions. Work study means that you're going to be doing some work on the grounds to help keep the place clean and organized. And
serving meals where they help, because we dish out the food to the people, or cleaning up after. It's just, but they still are able to attend lots of classes and do the exercising and come to the lectures and get personal counseling. All that is included. There's two prices. One is the full price, believe it or not, only $2,000 for all that, including your hotel. And the other is $1,000 for the work study. And it's the third week in April. It's in a beautiful southern environment with beautiful mountains, lakes, wonderful guinea hens running around, and swans and eagles. It's just breathtaking.
All right. So listen, if you're interested in that, and who wouldn't be, give me a call. I'm at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. I'm going to be standing by all day today interviewing people. I interview everyone. So give me a call, and let's get you signed up.
Give that number again, please.
631-504-6198.
Good. That's Lou M. Panessi, and last opportunity for those who want to change their life. And a lot of people come because they want to de-stress. They want a whole new affirmation of looking at life from a positive, upbeat, can-do, supportive way. There's none of the negative chatter, and it's just a blissful place to be. And a lot of people deserve a chance just to decompress, de-stress, rejuvenate, start the process of rebuilding your life from the inside out. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
Back in a moment with my guest for Conversations with Remarkable Minds. Please stay with us.
Try to do. Bad luck fella's got to hold on you. Don't spend your money, about to lose your home. Done lost your woman and everything you own. All that is plain mistakes, the chances go around. But if you want to know the truth about it, I tell you what's pulling you down, down. Got bad luck.
Welcome back, everyone. Let's go to the Ozark Mountains. We're standing by as Andrew Harvey. Gave you his bio at the beginning of the program, so let's just say hello to him. Nice to have you back with us, Andrew.
Great to be back with you, Gary. Thank you for your magnificent work. Thank you.
Andrew, perhaps you are familiar with a book by the anti-war social activist and Trappist monk, Father Thomas Merton, entitled
Yes.
Raids on the Unspeakable.
Love that book.
Not one of his more popular books, written, I recall, closer towards the end of his life.
Yes.
The Unspeakable was a term Merton coined at the heart of the 60s after the assassination of JFK, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X,
yes,
and Bobby Kennedy. Each who was a profound prophetic voice during their day and in the midst of the nuclear arms race in the Vietnam War. And it was a time not too dissimilar than ours. What Merton was touching upon was a diabolical presence whose depth and deceit seemed to go beyond the capacity of words to describe. I found a quote from that publication. Merton wrote, quote, "One of the awful facts of our age is the evidence that the world is stricken indeed, stricken to the very core of its being by the presence of the unspeakable," end quote. Now, rather remarkable, since Merton was cloistered in a completely removed from mainstream media, television, radio, and newspaper environment. What Merton was warning people about was the dire spiritual and psychic cost for anyone who becomes reconciled with the unspeakable. And Merton further elaborated that the protection from this danger is to become more fully human in all of our physical, mental, and spiritual capacities, and in so doing, the welling up of compassion and empathy would enable us to confront the unspeakable. So starting there, what are the unconscious means by which people reconcile themselves with this darkness, what I call the dark side of human nature, or what Merton called the unspeakable, and even very good, well-meaning, and even spiritually inclined people still get stuck into this vortex unknowingly? We only need to look at the German people during World War II, most of whom were considered good Germans and good Christians, but still got stuck into that darkness and in a sense became unwilling pawns in this violent and inhumane agenda. How do we explain this? Because we are certainly seeing history repeat itself now on many more threatening fronts. The forum is yours.
Well, I think that what Merton is talking about is something that very few people dare to talk about. What Merton is talking about is the enormous power of evil, of the very darkest parts of human nature, and the powers and principalities that St. Paul mentions. This is hardly a topic in our time, and it's one of the most terrifying things that at the moment when evil is having such an orgy in every institution, on every level, we're not allowed to speak about it. Whereas our only hope comes from truly finding the inner strength to be able to see what you could call the systems of Antichrist working for the destruction of the planet on every level. You talk about Germany going down into this vortex of unconscious collusion with the dark. What about modern America? What about a culture that absolutely still half of Americans deny global warming? What about a culture that goes on in its orgy of consumerism at a moment when it's quite clear that that consumerism is threatening the life of the planet? What about a culture that allows the Supreme Court to legislate the selling of democracy to the corporations? What about a culture that remains so hideously passive in the face of immense injustices within America, injustices to the homeless, to the black, to the African-American people? We are a culture which has wedded itself to the dark. And it's very hard for people to see this because so much of what is given to us and fed us comes from institutions and corporations and media systems that are in the control of the dark. So people have become accustomed to a wholly depraved way of seeing the world and acting in the world, and become so powerless when they wake up that they can't feel any strength within to do the work of sacred activism, to do the work of rising to meet this challenge from a healed and passionate inner place. So we're in a very painful, devastating situation.
Okay. If we are engaged in participating in creating horrific future conditions on the planet, such as contributing to climate change and global warming by kind of passive denialism, recognizing the problem but not motivated to do anything about it, then what is our sacred responsibility for the results that are created?
Our responsibility is total. And that's one of the reasons why people are so scared of waking up, because the New Age says waking up is an adorable and wonderful process, and this is such stupidity, because true awakening involves massive disillusion, disillusion at one's own collusion with the systems that have the death machine, and disillusion with the way in which human beings have allowed this vast, chaotic, destructive machine to be created in the first place. So it's very important that people understand that if they're going to pursue true awakening, they're going to have to become spiritually strong enough to be able to stand the revelations that then come, let alone own up to those revelations and start working inwardly to transform the situation. And it's very difficult to find people willing to do that work. I go around the country speaking of the shadows of this culture, speaking of our own shadows that collude with those shadows, speaking of the shadows that this vast crisis is reflecting in the depths of our life, and people are stunned by this information and really very rarely want to engage with it. And yet it's only by engaging with it that we have a hope in heaven or hell of getting through this situation without being annihilated and potentially helping create a new world.
This week there was a very dire study released by the Potsdam Institute in Germany. Researchers now have clear evidence that the conveyor belt in the Atlantic Ocean that I've spoken with first about 8 years ago, when I told people there are 12 tipping points, right, major tipping points, there are other ones as well, that four of them have now tipped.
Yeah.
Some are tipping. We can't do anything about either of those, and some we could do something about. So no matter what happens legislatively, we will still feel the impact of these tippings. Like California's into what is considered a 30-year drought cycle.
Yes.
They only have a year's worth of reservoir water left. They'll still get some water off the runoff, but not much, and from the Little Colorado and from the Sierra Nevadas. But otherwise, you're going to have at least 70% of the state of California out of water completely. And
right,
yet there is nothing being done that's measurable, telling people, well, don't water your lawn, don't wash your car, don't use as much water. None of this is really mandatory for people, and they can get around it. But you have 40 million people, 39 million people living in California, living in complete denial. No one is actually moving, and the state isn't wanting to reduce property values by telling people we've got a tsunami hitting us here. So they live in this denialism. We have denialism in the Middle East, that we give Israel $3 billion a year in armaments. We
Absolutely.
Give them intelligence, and yet we want peace in the Middle East. Who, what reasonable portion wasn't? We want the Israelis and the Palestinians to be able to live in peace, and yet we are sponsoring apartheid. And
Absolutely.
Our legislative process is not willing to acknowledge that. So when you create apartheid, if you were kept under the same conditions as the Palestinians, what would be your reaction? What would be your children's reactions, your grandchildren, if you were all born and had to live under it? And then we wonder, why are people angry? We only support dictatorships. We only support countries like Saudi Arabia that beheaded 88 people, but we won't talk about their beheading, but ISIS beheading, yes. We support a country that is in denial of women's rights completely. They use women like breeding machines and nothing else.
Well, they can't even drive.
Can't drive.
And they have without being imprisoned. Yeah.
And so we live by these contradictions. We say we want change. Ask any American, do you want to see change? And they say, yes. Are you willing to change? No.
Are you willing to sacrifice for change? Are you willing to sacrifice your comfort for the restructuring of a world that is totally insane and despoiling nature?
Well, let me finish this one
point.
Let me finish this one point, because I'm trying to tie all this together. So 7 years ago, I told the public on this radio show, I did a one-hour special on the 12 tipping points. One of those hours, well, it was actually 5 hours, but one of them was on the conveyor belt, this bringing warm water from the southern part of the Atlantic up north around Ireland and that area and back down, bringing cool water back down. That's that conveyor belt. Now, according to that Potsdam Institute study, that conveyor belt in the Atlantic is slowing, the slowest
right.
it's been in 10,000 years. And this is one of the very critical tipping points now being reached, and it's anyone's guess what kind of cascade of catastrophic events it might cause within a very short period of time. We're told it could bring us back to the what would have been the 12th century in Europe, and that would have devastating effect. You drop the temperature 8 degrees in Europe. Think of what it would do to the trees, the flora, the fauna. Think of what it would do for the growing, the crops you couldn't grow because they'd be too cold. So when we pile up all the climate change studies and review them, indeed we are facing a future of apocalyptic proportions and a world that may not be able to support the kind of life and the amount of life we now have. There will always be life supported, but it won't be for most people. How can we use this dire, horrendous scenario of the future to our advantage? For example, by mourning the inevitable inevitability of something precious being lost, such as the pending death of a loved parent, a child, or friend, when we can come to a full realization that someone we love deeply is about to die and will no longer be in our presence in life, frequently we can transform us and force us to confront our regrets and embrace higher values. Your thoughts on this with respect to the environmental threats we're facing, what I just mentioned about we live in this duality of denialism. We want peace in the Middle East, but we do everything that creates war. We want harmony, we create disharmony. We want to have prosperity for everyone, yet we create ghettos. We want people to have freedoms of choice. Then we have the Patriot Act and constant surveillance, and we have return to debtor's prison. If you can't pay a credit card bill, you can go to jail. So we live in this massive contradiction of reason and logic. Your thoughts. Take your time.
Well, I think you've analyzed it brilliantly and heartbreakingly. And I would just add that I've been reading a very powerful book by Guy McPherson and Carolyn Baker called The Extinction Dialogues, in which Guy McPherson, a very powerful environmental expert, and Carolyn Baker, someone who's been working psychologically and spiritually in the terms of collapse, really lay it on the line and say, look, it's not only that the currents are slowing and that we've got all of these feedback loops that are operating and that we've already passed many, many tipping points. Now, vast amounts of methane gas are being released through the thawing of the permafrost, and methane gas is infinitely more powerful than CO2, more destructive. So they're talking about the potential of extinction between 15 and 20 years ahead. This is unbelievably scary stuff, especially when you face something else that they're saying, which is that there's no real hope in the collapse of industrial civilization, because not only would it create anarchy on a massive level, which could lead to God knows what, with all the nuclear powers ramping up their nuclear resources at the moment, but the fact is that if the grid goes down, potentially 400 nuclear reactors could go off. So we'd have a 400 times Fukushima event, which would annihilate life anyway. So we're between a rock and a hard place, and nobody in power seems to be facing up to this. And the populace are in a state of complete denial. But it's not just their fault. That's what's so frightening about the situation. The Koch brothers have poured, I think it is, $1.4 billion into deliberate misinformation. There's vast corporate money going into selling a completely insane vision of this situation, and people are buying it because the alternative is to really understand that the American dream is a nightmare, that we've bought a vision of infinite progress, which is a kind of spiritual and moral insanity, and that if there's any hope at all, we're going to have to give up our addiction to comfort, which has now become pathological. So how this is going to happen, I don't think anybody knows. My greatest fear is that people will only wake up after a series of disasters, which make it almost obvious that there's very little that we can do except endure. And that will be a terrible situation for the human race. But what I have pledged my life to is trying to help people wake up to the direness of the situation, but from a deep understanding of their divine nature, because it's been my own experience that I can only stand to know what I know and stand to see what I see, because I do the daily constant practice of staying attuned to the deathless within me so that I can really face as far as I'm able, the depths of the crisis and still continue to work within it with grace, with love, with passion, with a deep peace, and with savvy wisdom. And that, to me, is what we're being challenged to rise to at this moment. We're being challenged to go very much deeper within so we can discover this deathless spiritual awareness that is our true divine inheritance, and very much further out in wise sacred action that we can take still, even in this circumstance, if we are strong enough and if we're helped enough and if we're sustained enough by sacred friendship and sacred friends who wish to join us. This is our only hope.
You're familiar with Eric Hoffer, correct?
Yes.
He said something that stuck in my mind for all these years. I was in high school. He said, "It is a perplexing and unpleasant truth that when men already have something worth fighting for, they do not feel like fighting." Now, in the current context, I have to ask, how much of what you just referred to with the Koch brothers spending all this money and other people spending money to propagandize, how much of the choice that we make is based upon us not wanting to think deeply, not wanting to go to where you just said you go, you're not afraid to go into the depths of an issue and face the darkest challenge and keep grounded that you still have possibilities and positive solutions, where people don't mind being propagandized. They watch the commercials. They don't mind.
They want to be propagandized at this moment, you know, because I think that at the key to the mystery that we're discussing, which is this unbelievable and appalling passivity in the face of extreme danger, seems to me in facing the fact that everyone at this moment is secretly, deeply traumatized. I have many spiritual clients who report their dreams, and it's amazing to me how many of the dreams I hear are about collapse, destruction, and the dreams which show that this crisis is being registered at an unconscious level by everyone. But this registering of the crisis is traumatizing, so people are, given the fact that they have very little spiritual depth and spiritual sustenance from the given religions, who are all hysterical at this moment, and the New Age, which is a disaster of fake optimism and narcissism, given that they have very little spiritual depth to face anything, no wonder they're running into the arms of desperate denial.
Wasn't it Robert F. Kennedy who said what is dangerous about extremists is not that they're extreme, but that they are intolerant? The evil is not what they say about their cause, but what they say about their opponents. Take a look at now at virtually all of our issues. The issues today are never discussed in the context of what we can do to resolve them peacefully, but rather first in ascribing blame, demonizing, and then becoming enraptured in how well we can deconstruct the public image of someone who is our opposite.
Absolutely, but the alternative would be to have a mature, sad discourse in which everyone took responsibility at deep levels for the depth of this crisis, in which everybody acknowledged that in so many ways we all keep the death machine going by our secretly corrupt and passive collusions with it. This requires a vast shift in consciousness in the human race, and there are no signs, except in amongst very few people, that this vast shift is taking place nearly quickly enough, and that's very dispiriting.
Within the context of the subjects and themes that we're discussing, do you have any thoughts about certain fantasies or delusional hopes or expectations people most frequently entertain to their detriment, including a vast number of people disconnected from the reality of life in the New Age, huggy-feely movement of which it's, you go to some of these so-called enlightened areas and you find people like in Sedona completely detached from reality. For example, let me give you one example.
Well, Sedona's a marvelous example of complete flaky, surreal detachment from the awful problems that are really our challenge. Yes.
I was recently in Sedona, and I was asked to do an impromptu discussion. It turned out to be a major lecture. And I had all day, I had all afternoon just to kind of hang around, and the former mayor took me around, showed me the town, and beautiful place, absolutely stunning, small. You could drive through the whole town in 5 minutes. In any case, I had these beautiful red outcroppings of rocks. But also I noticed all these homeless people, and when I was speaking with them, they were veterans. And the mayor said, you know, they were running out of water. They get their water from higher up at Flagstaff, and they're running out of water because they don't have this snow. And then I found out that one of the largest communities, thriving communities, is a drug community right below Sedona that supplies the drugs to the people of Sedona. Sedona's only got about 12,000, 13,000 people. It's small. So anyhow, that evening when I was talking, I said, how many people here feel that you really support women's rights? And all the hands went up, and would never want to see a woman struggle. And all the hands went up. And I said, are you sure about that? Now think for a moment. Don't just do it out of some response. Do you really take the time to see that your actions would not negatively impact others? Yes. Okay. Do you feel that because of living in this kind of spiritual environment that you indeed are manifesting spirituality? Yes. Okay, let's go through some of this then. So I showed him my shirt, and I said, look at the label, Made in USA. All right, union labor. And if not, at least fair trade labor. I said, where's your clothes made? All of them. Everyone that showed me the label was made in Bangladesh and China. I said, well, then you're exploiting women. Well, I hadn't thought about that. No. And then so the same with your jeans and with your sunglasses and your sandals. Now, how many people in here, you know, use marijuana? Yes. All of these hands went up. I said, well, I support the legalization of marijuana and its medical use because there's a lot of healing within the cannabinoids, but yes. That's not from smoking it. That's from the oils. And the oil of hemp is one of the most healing oils there is in nature, more healing even than olive oil or flaxseed oil. I said, so I support that. But when you're smoking it, you're not smoking it because you want to, you know, heal yourself, you're smoking it to relax. Understand, you shouldn't be criminalized. But how many people died in Mexico last year so that you could have the marijuana that you're smoking now? I don't know. Well, thus far, we've had 115,000 disappearances with death or death that we know of.
In one year? No,
that's total in the last 5 years.
Oh my God.
At that time, it was hundreds of thousands dead. All right? Are missing or negatively impacted because of the drug trade, which primarily comes across the border.
I said, so compared to the corruption of the whole culture that is happening in Mexico, I know Mexico well, and Mexico's a very amazing but terrifying place.
And
it's not simply people being disappeared, it's the whole corruption of the police, the corruption of the
politicians. At every level, it's corrupt.
So
I said, would you have chosen to smoke the cigarette if you knew that someone's life would be negatively impacted for you to be able to do that? And I said, also, you say that you're compassionate, yet I'm talking with veterans today, and they say that no one feeds them, no one cares about them, and yet you see them all the time. You cannot see homeless veterans in this area, and you're running out of water. So how in touch are you with your own environment? So I said, there's a difference between living a truly spiritual, balanced life where you are engaged in your environment and human rights, and living this kind of new agey existence where you sit on a crystal and meditate.
Narcissism of the highest and stupidest.
Tell us
kind.
About that, because that's a big movement in the United States today.
To me, it's the most dispiriting of all of the movements in the United States, and it's been a constant polluting influence because, for me, the New Age is just an orgy of narcissism and denial in the name of sacred awakening and enlightenment. So it's taking the highest truth and perverting it, making it into a consumerist, materialist truth, viz. The Secret, which is an abomination, and getting people by greed and spiritual materialism to really believe that sitting on their cushions is going to be an adequate response to the potential end of the planet. So it's done three things, this New Age movement, which are very disturbing. First, it's propagated a completely fake understanding of awakening as always light, always beautiful, always serene, when awakening also has tremendous ordeals and difficulties and agonies which need to be embraced. All the serious mystical systems talk about that. So it's polluted the very essence of sacred teaching. Secondly, instead of helping people out of the tyranny of the ego, what the New Age movement has done is take very narcissistic egos and give them half-baked techniques to try and realize their deepest wishes, which is really enslaving people at an even deeper level to the ego, as if we needed any more narcissistic encouragement from any direction. Thirdly, in its denial of what's going on and its propagation of theories such as you cannot look at things darkly, you just feed the energy if you look at things and see the darkness in what's happening, which is such insanity, with such kinds of theories around, it makes a social, political, economic response, a response of sacred activism, a response of a worldwide revolution of love in action, almost impossible, because it refuses to allow or give people the techniques to be able to embrace what's really happening and rise to meet it. So if you look at those three things, the pollution of sacred teaching, the encouragement of the tyranny of the ego, and the refusal through denial to deal with the crisis leading to deep castration of the impulse to radical transforming change, then you see, my God, the New Age is the biggest gift to the corporations, the biggest gift to the existing political system, the biggest gift that could possibly have been given to the death machine, because here you have a movement purporting to be spiritual, which actually serves perfectly to render a whole population in a coma.
Well, let me
I
ask
hope
you
I've been strong enough, because I feel very deeply about this. Does,
okay,
does what I say ring true to you?
Yes, it does, but I see it in a little different way, because being on PBS a lot and being out there at different lectures, there are certain places I will not go and lecture simply because they have people who I do not respect, who I know are using spiritual aligned themes but are there purely out of unmitigated greed, who've never had an original thought in their brain, who plagiarize other people's intellectual thoughts. I won't mention names, but look at the people who, like the Oprahs and the people she's had on repeatedly and others who are popular, even household names, but they also are right up against the New Age, using the themes of the New Age, but learning how to market themselves and make fortunes.
Oh, God, it's
where
shattering.
At the end of the day, nobody gets healthier, nobody gets happier, nobody gets more spiritual, but they get a lot richer.
I'm so glad you mentioned Oprah, because of course, she's done some good stuff, but the people that she gets on are all the New Age apparatchiks. She doesn't ever allow on her show people who are doing serious, edgy work. This is a catastrophic failing in her responsibility to the public, but I think probably she's very shrewd. She understands that people don't want to be told about how dark things are or to be challenged to do anything. They want to believe that by good vibrations, they can solve this. And she's playing into that instead of really challenging it, which she has the power to do. And this is something you see across the whole mainstream media, isn't it? I mean, you must see it so acutely doing the work you do that there's hardly any support for any real, edgy, transformative work out there. Anybody doing that kind of work has to reconcile himself or herself to relative poverty, relative obscurity, deep kinds of sometimes threatening denial, and has to truck on without very much support. This is one of the reasons why so few people are willing to take up the challenge of awakening and putting awakening into action, because they see quite clearly what happens to people who do. Look at the way we treat whistleblowers, for example. Look at the horror they go through. Look at what anybody who gets up in a New Age meeting and says, look at the facts of poverty, look at the facts of environmental destruction. Serene smiles cross the faces of the teachers, and they're told that they're feeding the darkness by looking at it. This kind of insanity is now epidemic, and it's one of the reasons why this culture is headed towards such massive destruction.
That and our civilization's faith in scientism above everything else. Certainly science has produced marvelous insights and technologies across many disciplines, and it's also created some of the most horrendous inventions whose shadows we continue to live under, for example, nuclear power and weapons. And it's too difficult to forecast that as an effect of the climate change and global warming increase more rapidly and becoming felt in distinct and in concrete ways when people in the developed nations really begin feeling the pain of their lives and hopes being stripped away from them, then we'll witness the scientific community in cahoots with government more aggressively advancing technologies that only impact us negatively. Final thoughts before the end of the program, please.
Well, I think that what we're really asking people to do is to take the future into their own hands and stop listening to the mainstream media and try and find out truly what's happening. There are wonderful websites like Arctic News where you can find out about methane. There are extraordinary books about the environment, for example, coming out, Naomi Klein's magnificent book, This Changes Everything. You don't have any excuse anymore not to be awake. You can find out the truth. Don't just look for the truth, however, because it will kill you if you're not grounded in spirit. So whatever access you have to the spirit, for God's sake, go for it. Start doing simple kinds of practice. Start meditating. Start becoming calm and spacious enough to be able to stand what you have to stand. But don't rest there either. Don't rest only in knowing what's happening, because everybody who knows what's happening is being challenged to do something that they can truly, truly dedicate themselves to. And as somebody who is beginning this global movement of sacred activism, what I say to you all is please, please don't be passive. Form networks of grace. Form groups of people that can actually start meeting together to do something real. Because in the face of so much suffering and horror, the one thing that will give our lives meaning is first facing up to what's happening, secondly grounding ourselves in the divine, and thirdly doing something with others to give our lives true purpose. That's what I would like to say.
I appreciate all that you have shared with us as insights. One quick final short answer. How would you approach resolving the conflicts in the Middle East?
I would approach it through the women. I think that the most important thing that we could do is to have women leaders bring together the women, the mothers and grandmothers on both sides, and really activate their deep passion for peace. I've worked with people from both sides in a small way, and I've seen how vast the difference is between the reactions of the men and the women. The women want an end to this. The women want a two-state solution. The women really have suffered horribly and enough, and I think activating the power and the voice of women in the Middle East is the key. But of course, again, it's very difficult because of the ways in which modern exploitations of Islam have created a terrible silence in the women. This is not going to be easy, but it is possible.
Thank you very much, Andrew Harvey.
Thank you, Gary.
Conversations with Remarkable Minds, transforming our values and activism to confront humanity's trajectory towards an uncertain and apocalyptic future. Dr. Andrew Harvey, a renowned religious scholar, educator, activist, and founder of the Institute of Sacred Activism. And his latest book is The Hope, A Guide to Sacred Activism, and which won the Nautilus Silver Award for Social Change. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now let's say hello to Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hi, Gary. Today on Lead Stories, we have a family reunion. It's the first time we're able to connect and exchange ideas in a while, so we're celebrating that today.
Great. Utrece Lead right now.